You're listening to Green Left Radio on 3CR. And this morning we have Saul Eslake. Saul is an independent economist, consultant, speaker, and vice chancellor's fellow at the University of Tasmania. Welcome, Saul.
Good morning, Zane. Thank you for having me on the program.
Oh, thanks for coming on. It's really good to have you with us. So there's been a lot of coverage in the media lately claiming that the, quoting Geoffrey Watson, who's been part of the administration of the CFMEU, Geoffrey Watson has claimed that out of the $100 billion big build here in Victoria, around $15 billion of that was money misappropriated by the CFMEU. Now, there was a Guardian article investigating that claim, and you were quoted in that article, and you've looked at a thing called the Engineering Construction Implicit Price Deflator to investigate that claim. Can you explain for listeners what an Engineering Construction Implicit Price Deflator is in layperson's terms?
Well, I'll do my best. It's not necessarily a simple concept, but maybe your listeners will be familiar with governments, politicians, commentators, and economists talking about things like real gross domestic product. And what that means is growth in the volume of goods and services produced in the Australian economy, measured in dollars, but after stripping out the impact of changes in the prices of those goods and services over a period of time, so that in a sense you're measuring volumes rather than values of goods and services. So the statistician, the ABS, on the basis of an enormous number of surveys of businesses, governments and consumers around the country, every quarter compiles estimates of gross domestic product in dollars of the day. We'll get the figures for the December quarter next Wednesday. And they attempt to convert that into real terms by stripping out movements in the prices of all of those goods and services quarter by quarter, year by year. And so you have nominal gross domestic product, which is measured in current dollars, and real gross domestic product, which is measured in the prices of some base period. And the ratio of those two things is the so-called implicit price deflator, in this case of GDP, can be used as a measure of inflation, a broader measure than the consumer price index, which only includes goods and services that consumers buy. For GDP as a whole, it includes prices of the things that we export. It includes prices of the things that businesses and governments buy, as well as consumers. Now, having said that, I hope I can take another step, which is to say that among the many surveys that the Stats Bureau undertakes is of the amount of money spent by businesses and governments around the country on engineering construction. That includes, in particular, infrastructure projects such as highways, railways, airports and bridges, ports. It also includes a good deal of expenditure on mines and gas fields and so forth by companies. But a big part of it is public sector spending on infrastructure projects. And as with GDP or consumer spending, the ABS publishes data on this in both nominal terms, that is dollars of the day, and real terms, that is after extracting movements in prices of the goods and services that go into infrastructure construction. And so we can derive an implicit price deflator of engineering construction activity, which in a sense is a measure of movements in the costs of undertaking this kind of work. And conveniently, the ABS publishes this for every state and territory. So to get cut to the chase, after hopefully that explanation is reasonably clear, This data tells us that over, for example, the period from the December quarter 2014 until the September quarter of 2025, which is the latest data that we have, so that's just over 11 years, the implicit price deflator of engineering construction spending rose by 36.8% in Victoria, which is actually the second lowest increase of any state or territory. Only the ACT, the implicit price deflator of engineering construction, rose by 35%. But, for example, in New South Wales, it rose by 37.4%, in Queensland by 42.1%, in South Australia by 43.2%, and in Western Australia by 45.7%. The average for Australia as a whole was 41.7%. That's almost 5 percentage points faster than the corresponding figure for Victoria. Now, none of this proves that Mr. Watson's calculations or allegations are wrong. It doesn't say anything about the extent or lack thereof of corruption in any part of the construction industry in Victoria. What it does tell you is that the inflation of construction costs on engineering projects has been, you know, by a reasonably wide margin, lower in Victoria than it has nationally, and a bit lower in Victoria than in New South Wales, which I suppose is Victoria's principal competitor for these things.
Hmm. Yeah, so you've said that it can't tell us anything about Watson's report. I've got an interest to declare here. I'm a CFMEU member. Okay. I tend to disagree a little bit, because I would have thought if the CFMEU has pushed up, we're talking about a $100 billion big build, and so presumably that $100 billion big build would have only cost $85 billion were it not for the unsavoury hand of the CFMEU on those jobs. I mean, I would have thought that if these 10 to 30% price increases that Watson alleges were there, I would have thought that would register on this engineering construction implicit price.
Well, it might. All I'm saying to you, Zane, is I don't know, and these figures don't prove one way or the other. I mean, one other possibility could be that the cost of labour, for example, in Victoria may have risen by more than in other states on construction projects, and businesses have had to absorb that into their profit margins if they've signed fixed price contracts with the Victorian government that don't allow them to pass increases in those sort of costs on to taxpayers in the form of the Victorian government. These figures don't tell us that. I did look to see if you can find data on movements in labour costs or wages on engineering construction projects or for construction more broadly by state, and those don't appear to be available. So that doesn't answer the question. I guess, you know, the bottom line, as far as I'm concerned, and as I say, I'm not in a position to offer an opinion one way or the other on the extent of corruption or any other kind of malpractice in Victoria or any other state. All I can say is the data tells me that engineering construction costs have risen by less in Victoria than any other jurisdiction except the ACT, and over a 14-year period by about 5 percentage points less than the national, sorry, an 11-year period, by about 5 percentage points less than the average for all states and territories.
Hmm. Yeah, well, I think it's certainly a very relevant contribution to this discussion that you've raised. So thank you for that. Now, while we've got you on the line,
sure.
I've spoken to some other CFMEU members, and one of the points that they raised is that when the Andrews government was elected back in, I think it was maybe late 2014.
That's why I picked 2014 as the starting point for these calculations, yes.
Yeah, so there's, I guess, as a socialist, but this is not a unique perspective to socialists. This is also a kind of a liberal or a social democratic approach to things. As population grows over time, you need to build infrastructure to keep up hospitals, schools, roads, rail, train stations, etc. One critique that we would have is that over the last probably 40 years in the era of neoliberalism, there's been a reduction of progressive taxation and an associated reduction in investment in necessary infrastructure compared to like the post-war period from the, say, 1950s through till the late 70s. And so one of the points that a fellow CFMEU member raised was that when the Andrews government was elected, It's almost like they tried to catch up on decades of underinvestment in infrastructure, and they ran all these projects concurrently, and that created a need for labour, and which probably meant that the thing was a bit more expensive than it might otherwise have been. Can you comment on this question of underinvesting in infrastructure over many decades and then trying to catch up? Is that a good idea?
I think there's a fair bit of truth in what you say there, Zane, although I'd note that underinvestment in infrastructure crossed party lines, if I can call it that. But say from the mid-1980s until about the global financial crisis, public investment as a share of Australia's economy declined quite significantly. And that was partly because that was an era when interest rates were relatively high, and so the cost of borrowing, which has in Australia been the traditional way that governments pay for infrastructure, and that's not necessarily wrong because infrastructure benefits future generations as well as the current one, and so it's appropriate that future generations meet some of the costs of providing long-lived infrastructure by servicing and repaying debt rather than imposing the entire burden on the current generation of citizens and taxpayers. But because interest rates rose very significantly in the 80s and 90s, and although they came down in the early 2000s, the impact of the big rises in interest rates over the previous 20 years still coloured people's thinking, irrespective of which side of politics they were on. That made it more expensive to finance government infrastructure projects and made governments more cautious about it. And I emphasise that probably the epitome of that was the Labor government of Bob Carr in New South Wales, which in particular put restrictions and sought to cut back public sector infrastructure spending and in various other ways also restricted the supply of housing. You know, Bob Carr's argument was that Sydney was full and therefore migration to the whole of Australia should be cut back because it's quite common for people from Sydney to think that what matters for Sydney should determine what happens in the rest of Australia as well. That attitude did start to change. After the global financial crisis, when governments, again irrespective of their political persuasion, saw it as appropriate to help prevent the onset of a depression by increasing public spending, and then interest rates came down to very low levels, and again, both Liberal and Labor governments started to be willing to borrow more in order to spend more on infrastructure. And the then governor of the Reserve Bank, Philip Lowe, was quite explicit in encouraging state governments to borrow more and spend more on infrastructure, which almost all of them did. And I think, you know, the people you've been speaking to are right to say that there has been an element of catch-up to make up for backlogs in infrastructure spending, and that almost certainly contributed to the pressure on both labour and materials costs that contribute to that, you know, overall fairly significant increase in the price of engineering construction activity across Australia. That was a big increase, and it does reflect pressures on the availability of both labour and materials to undertake that work. The criticism I probably have, Zane, of infrastructure projects in Victoria and some other places is that I think governments, again, of both political persuasions, have been far too secretive about the business case for undertaking some of these things. I think when taxpayers' money is being spent, the public is entitled to know the basis on which some projects have been chosen and others have been rejected. There ought to be a benefit-cost analysis of any project like this. Some benefits are often hard to quantify, and that's okay. Elected governments are entitled to make those judgments, but I think they ought to be more forthcoming with citizens about the reasons why they pick particular projects and reject others than governments of all political persuasions have been in recent years. Too much is commercial in confidence. Mm. Too much is redacted, and not enough information is shared with the public so that they in turn can make judgments at elections as to whether governments have been good stewards of their money.
Certainly. All right, well, we are running short of time, but yeah, thank you very much for joining us this morning. And yeah, it was good to hear you dunking on Bob Carr and the attitudes of some Sydney people. We like that here at 3CR.
Well, it's been a pleasure, Zane. Thank you for having me on.
All right.